And so when did that change? And what message do you have to parents for trans kids?
Well, it especially started changing around puberty. My anxiety grew, my dysphoria, which is the feeling that your sexual characteristics, primary or secondary, don't match your brain. That grew. So there's a lot of extra stress and distress during that period of time. And so I really started expressing myself more firmly as a masculine individual. And then once I learned what transgender meant, I pretty quickly established that that was who I was. And that I came out when I was 14. And I would say to other trans youth, of course, be careful. It might not be safe for everybody to come out where they are. Some people might be at risk of violence or being cast out by their families. But there is a future for you in which you can live as who you are.
We will have to leave it there, Gavin. I want to thank you, Gavin Grimm, and Chase Strangio for joining us. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Abe and Joe Talk Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Identities and Futures. Women and non-binary folks speak out March 7th at 7:30 p.m. at Holocene in Portland. Identities and Futures is an evening of performances, animation, and DJs, including DJ Kim Fizzy, Lily Croft, Gene Etheridge, Pocha Radicales, and more. Again, that's Identities and Futures, Women and Non-Binary Folks Speak Out, March 7th at 7:30 p.m. at Holocene, 1001 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Oregon Action Plan, Immigration Rights, on Sunday, March 19th at the Concordia University Library in Portland. Oregon Action Plan is a series of events to inform and empower our community. This first event will focus on immigration in Oregon. How is what's happening on the national level affecting people in Oregon? What are organizations doing to support and protect their communities? And what can allies do to be effective and supportive? Again, that's Oregon Action Plan, Immigration Rights, on Sunday, March 19th at the Concordia University Library, 2800 Northeast Liberty Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from ADX, a collaborative hub offering access to shared wood, metal, screen printing, jewelry, and digital design shops through a monthly membership program. The ADX Market Space Learning Center and Fabrication Shop allows people to bring their ideas to life. Open every day at 417 Southeast 11th in Portland and at adxportland.com.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Well, I'm totally flummoxed and have decided to put up an American flag in every room.
That's probably wise.
I think it's wise, and perhaps tattoo one on my ass.
That's a good idea.
Oh, in case I run into a naked inspection at the airport or something.
That's true. I think that only goes part of the way to where you need to go, though.
What do you mean?
I mean, well, that expresses your nationalism, yes.
Yes, yes.
But not your racial pride.
my yeah. racial pride.
That's very important.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. Okay, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That is Abe Proctor. I am Joe Uris. The number to call, and it is a talk radio show, is 231-8187. Abe, what's up?
Well, today we're going to talk about the alt-right.
What's that?
The alt-right is a, you know, whenever we start talking about groups of people like this, it starts sounding really silly really quickly. Because, you know, we're talking about people. We're talking about individuals.
I think people are very silly.
Yeah, people are very silly, yes. Well, I digress. Let's talk about these people.
Sorry.
These individuals.
Yes.
The alt-right is a subset of conservative thought.
Well, is it a has it existed in the past with that name?
It has. That term was coined in 2008. However, there's an older term that I think is more accurate to describe this group of people.
What's that?
White supremacists.
Oh.
I think that really hits the nail on the head. The term alt-right is a little nicer. It's a, you know,
sorry,
maybe, you know, maybe a little more of a family-friendly term, because let's face it.
Family-friendly term?
White supremacist can be a little off-putting, you know what I mean?
I do. Yeah, because I don't fit the category.
You don't?
Uh-uh.
Oh.
No, I'm not really white.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, because kind of you look it and you sound it.
Well, that just shows you what you know.
Yeah, I suppose.
Right.
The alternative right. Alt-right is short for alternative right. This is a term coined in 2008 by a guy named Richard Bertrand Spencer. He's the head of the white nationalist think tank called the National Policy Institute.
Mm.
So essentially, alt-right describes a loose set of ideals, sort of a loosely defined ideology centered on white identity, and by extension, the preservation of Western civilization.
Does that mean like the people painted blue that fought in England a long time ago?
People painted blue fought in England? No.
Yeah, they were white.
Yeah, they were. But wrapped up in this notion of the alt-right and of the self-appointed guardians of Western civilization is that all that is good and right in the world flows from Western civilization. And the creators and the gatekeepers of Western civilization are white people.
So I'm a little confused here. Now, the recent genetic science indicates that all of us humans, hairless beasts, came from Africa, which would, by implication, make us not white.
Yes, if we're being empirical and scientific about it, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
But yet if we're going to wander in the ideological wilderness of the alt-right, yes, we are all originally Africans, but at one point we left Africa and we went our separate ways, and the people that went into Europe were just better. They're just way better.
They're just way better?
Yeah, well, look, see, we got the Roman Empire. We've got classical Greek civilization.
Roman Empire, they crucified people?
Yeah, it was brilliant. See, that was the greatness of Western civilization in action. Mm. Yes. And then we begat, of course, Christianity, which is the one true faith.
Well, who's going to argue with that?
Well, lots of people, as it turns out.
Yeah, really.
The Southern Poverty Law Center, which is really a wonderful organization.
It is.
I must say. They've done a lot of great work, not only categorizing and cataloging the activities of hate groups, but also of successfully litigating against a lot of people who act in hateful ways and commit hate crimes. They played a role here in the Pacific Northwest back in the late 80s when they essentially busted the White Aryan Resistance Organization. Do you remember that?
Oh, I do.
There's an Ethiopian here in East Portland named Mulugeta Sarra, apologies if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, who was murdered by some skinheads.
Yeah.
You remember this?
Oh, yeah.
This was a big deal.
Yeah.
Portland at the time was known as the sort of de facto national headquarters of the Aryan nationalist movement. The lawsuit that was subsequently brought by the Southern Poverty Law Center broke that organization for all intents and purposes. I'm not sure of the extent to which Aryan nationalist types are still active in Portland, but they certainly since that day have not enjoyed the organization or the profile that they did.
Oh, well.
Right. Anyway, this is all to say that the Southern Poverty Law Center at splcenter.org does a wonderful job summarizing the identity and history of the alt-right. I'm going to read from their website right now. At the heart of the alt-right is a break with establishment conservatism that favors experimentation with the ideas of the French New Right. Libertarian thought, as exemplified by former U.S. Representative Ron Paul, anarcho-capitalism, which advocates individual sovereignty and open markets in place of an organized state, Catholic traditionalism, which seeks a return to Roman Catholicism before the liberalizing reforms of the Second Vatican Council.
When was the Second Vatican Council? Do you know?
It was the mid-20th century sometime. Okay. I couldn't tell you exactly when. And according to the SPL's website, it is a reaction to the conservative. This is the alt-right is a reaction to the conservative establishment, as exemplified by the nomination of Barry Goldwater for the presidency in 1964. That solidified several aspects of contemporary conservatism, including an emphasis on liberty, freedom, free markets, and capitalism. The alt-right considers these ideas to be anti-ideals and claims that the alt-right is redefining conservatism for a new generation of white-centered, white nationalist, economic nationalist conservatism.
Kind of whitewash.
Yeah, kind of whitewash. So why is this relevant, you might ask? Why are we devoting an episode of the Abe and Joe Show to talk about this? Well, because one of the most well-recognized, nationally known figures in the alt-right movement is now President Trump's special advisor.
That can't be.
Steve Bannon.
Steve Bannon is alt-right?
Steve Bannon is alt-right. Steve Bannon is an interesting dude. There's a profile written about him in the New York Times late last year. He was an officer in the United States Navy, educated at some elite schools. Made his wealth sort of working at the intersection of filmmaking and finance. He helped bankroll a number of movies. Some of them were pretty big movies with pretty big stars. But he also wrote and produced a number of documentary films, including a rather worshipful documentary about Ronald Reagan. So he's a longtime conservative. His views were forged in the 70s and 80s, coming up during that era. And he took over in 2012 the website Breitbart.com. You've heard of Breitbart.com?
I've heard of it, but I never really understood why Breitbart. I mean, I don't know.
Breitbart.com emerged mostly during the aughties as an online voice of the right wing of the conservative movement in the United States. At this point in time, under the guidance of Andrew Breitbart, it was not identified with the alt-right movement, but rather with a more mainstream sort of repulsive conservatism. Garden variety, repulsive conservatism.
Repulsive conservatism, a new term.
No, not really. We've spent a lot of our time talking about repulsive conservatism. So when Andrew Breitbart passed away in 2012, Steve Bannon took over the site.
Did the Russians kill him?
No. Oh, no, okay. I think he was consumed from within by his own hate.
Oh.
That's my unprofessional armchair diagnosis of what killed Andrew Breitbart. So after Breitbart died, Bannon took over his website, and that's when you begin to see this anti-Semitic, white nationalist, economic nationalist flavor come into to the writings on Breitbart.com. This, not coincidentally, is also when he started to appear on Donald Trump's radar.
Ah.
Donald Trump is a sometime consumer of Breitbart News.
Would this help to explain the tweets, Donald's tweets?
No, I think you can explain Donald's tweets entirely in terms of Donald himself. But you can explain the sort of information that finds its way into his brain in terms of what he's hearing from Steve Bannon, who, of course, now is his closest advisor.
Well, does Kellyanne come out of the same tradition?
I have no idea where she came out of.
Out of hell, I think.
So what we're going to do today is we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about this movement. And we're going to talk about the implications to our constitutional republic of the fact that a bunch of white nationalists are now running the show.
Okay, this raises a question for me. I understand, and this is something we'll explore more because we can't avoid it, the anger and the disenfranchisement felt by many, many working class people. I have long felt that the term middle class was introduced as a substitute for the reality of working class way back, both yeah. by Reagan and, more importantly, by President Clinton. And I think that this sense of disenfranchisement, this sense of loss of income, all of which aren't to some degree real, is what fuels a great mass of fundamentally not well-informed, I'm not going to say ignorant, but not well-informed people who were the majority of the supporters of Donald Trump. Am I right?
Yeah, I think that's largely right. Yeah.
Okay.
So let's take a phone call.
Okay.
And then we'll dig into the
231-8187.
Phil, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for the great discussion. And don't forget, just like Rupert Murdoch, Robert Mercer, who owns Breitbart, Hate Bart News, has been bankrolling this for a long time, billionaire hedge fund guys.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to pose a question to you, wise gentlemen. Apropos of Hate Bart as well, with a professional troll getting kicked off last week of Breitbart and his book deal, and how Trump was a protege of Roy Cohn from way back in the day. And I kind of got to thinking that maybe Roy Cohn was this kind of version of Milo, of just being a hateful, spiteful, mean person. And you can kind of see the connection between Roy Cohn and Trump and Roy Cohn and Donald Trump and Robert Mercer and that ultra-nationalist wing of the Republican Party. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Well, you know, you've thrown a fine kettle of fish, as Laurel and Hardy used to say, at us, and it's a long and really twisty tale. But the way I, and this is just me, I'm not speaking for my partner here, but for me, there has always been a very strong racist set of presumptions. Legitimizations that have fueled the creation of this country, beginning with the slaughter of Native Americans, the creation of permanent slavery, and so on. So
predating the creation of this country,
if
we're being honest.
Yeah. Actually, part of the European mythos.
Really, yes, that drove the entire colonial movement.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and there was much theological discussion about whether persons of color were, in fact, human beings. I mean, it was really at that gross, unscientific, vicious level. At any rate, talking about all of that, we have a peculiar phenomenon today. For example, unfortunately, I think, a great deal of the political power that has come to hardworking American people of the Jewish faith has turned its attention to Zionism, not just as an idea of protection for and creation of a homeland for Jews, which is a thing we can argue about, but moreover, a delegitimization of, for example, Palestinians or persons of color anywhere. Now, all of that is sits side by side with the notion of Aryan superiority, which, of course, if you want to be really logical and rational, you ignore the fact that Aryanism is a mythos, and you just say, well, how can you be a supporter of white power in any of its forms and then turn right around at the same time and talk of Israel as if it were part of that, which in terms of the silly, and I have to say it is silly, kind of racial identity ideas that characterize the alt-right, it seems to me, wouldn't allow that. And yet, there it is.
Yeah, you've zeroed in on one of the big paradoxes of conservative thought in general, and particularly of those among the alt-right. Yeah, simultaneously anti-Semitic yet pro-Israel.
Yeah.
It's an odd thing, isn't it? But I think you can explain it like this. A lot of conservatives, especially religious conservatives in this country, subscribe to what's broadly known as end times thinking. Are you familiar with this?
End times thinking.
End times thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Meaning that the end of the world is foretold in the book of Revelation in the New Testament. I don't know if you've ever read it.
Oh, yeah.
It's like an acid trip gone horribly, horribly wrong.
Well, I've done both.
I wouldn't advise mixing the two. Right? That would be bad. That would be very bad.
You're quite right.
Right. So one of the preconditions, according to the book of Revelation, for the return of Jesus from heaven.
When you say Jesus, you're about Jesus.
The return of Jesus.
Okay.
Is that the Israelites must be in control of the Holy Land.
Oh, yeah, right. I read that.
Yes. And we've talked about this on the show before.
Yeah.
Back during the Bush administration, when a whole bunch of end times thinkers were occupying very high levels of government, the president himself being an end times thinker. So Israel must control the Holy Land in order for Jesus to make his return.
Oh, he can't come till Israel.
It is one of the preconditions.
I'm avoiding some dirty talk here.
Yeah, okay. It's one of the preconditions, as is the emergence of the Antichrist figure, who's an incredibly charismatic, popular figure who manages to unite the nations of the world.
Is that Trump?
Oh, God, I hope not. Right. So that's how alt-right thinkers can be both simultaneously, they can be anti-Semitic yet pro-Israel. Pro-Israel because they see that, the Jewish state in Palestine, as a precondition for the return of Jesus.
So this is biblical exceptionalism.
It is absolutely biblical exceptionalism. I like that terminology. So getting back to Bannon's takeover of Breitbart.com and its subsequent morphing into an organ of the alt-right. Again, the Southern Poverty Law Center has done a fascinating qualitative and quantitative analysis of some of the language used on the site. So back in the Breitbart era, they did a word. They analyzed the use of the term Jewish.
Oh.
Right around the end of the Breitbart era at Breitbart.com. And back then, the word Jew or Jewish was used primarily in a similar way to denote someone's racial origin. So they would use Jewish in the same way that they would use white or black or Hispanic or Latino, something like that. Now, that's offensive on a number of levels, but we're getting to the really offensive stuff.
Okay.
So after Bannon takes over Breitbart,
mm-hmm.
a similar analysis was conducted by the Southern Poverty Law Center in 2016. Now, the word Jewish, it's used in an entirely different way the majority of the time on the site. It's now used as an adjective like socialist, like Muslim, like communist.
So Jewish moves from a racist notion to an ideological notion.
An ideological and a racist.
And notion. Oh, they don't abandon racism.
No, they don't. No, they,
no,
do, not
they do not abandon
racism. So
that
you can read all of this on splcenter.org. It's fascinating, this linguistic analysis. So this is how the site began to shift under Bannon. And here's just a sampling of some of the headlines of articles at Breitbart.com under the Bannon, the rule of Steve Bannon.
The Bannon banner.
That's right. Planned Parenthood's body count under Cecile Richards is up to half a Holocaust.
Half a Holocaust?
Yes.
Is that better than none?
I guess.
Sorry.
Bill Kristol, Republican spoiler, renegade Jew. Political correctness protects Muslim rape culture.
Wow.
Racist pro-Nazi roots of Planned Parenthood revealed. And on and on and on.
Okay, that last one refers to the...
to Margaret Sanger.
Margaret
yes.
Sanger and so on. Okay.
Yes, but I tend to think that their intent there was not a scholarly examination of the roots of Planned Parenthood,
yeah,
but an attempt to slur the organization. Because the handy thing about the alt-right, the handy thing about alt-right thinking mm-hmm. is that it incorporates all of the, as I mentioned earlier, garden variety repulsive conservative thinking. So wrapped up in this white nationalist, white identity, economic nationalist, and we're going to talk a little bit more about economic nationalism in a minute, wrapped up along with all that stuff is traditional anti-abortion, pro-Christian, anti-Muslim, anti-gay, anti-Semitic, garden variety, repulsive conservative stuff. So it's a hopped up, exponentially more virulent species of conservatism.
And this is what dominates the so-called thinking of the president of the United States?
It certainly influences his thinking.
Okay.
And I would say you can see this influence in the policy decisions that Donald Trump has made thus far. And you can see it animating the spirit of his tweets as well.
Well, see, I have a theory that his tweeter is actually his brain. It's connected by mystic wires.
Right, he's got like a Twitter implant.
Yeah,
he just has to think this stuff.
Yeah, he doesn't even think anything. He is an automaton who walks around making money. That's the one thing he's been programmed to do, and is extremely egotistical and paranoid. And it's really all controlled by his telephone, his handheld device.
You heard it here first. Listeners.
Otherwise, how do you explain the crazy?
This is the Avery Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. You can also listen to us online at KBOO.FM. You can call and join the conversation at 503-231-8187, or you can leave us written feedback at our Facebook page, facebook.com/AbeandJoe, or on the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. Let's go to the phones. Brian, good morning.
Good morning. Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, good morning.
You'll notice we respond
to
you.
I'll just ask you right off the top. Would you mind if I told you a very short story for some?
How short?
Sure.
That you reminded me about this story by talking about Revelations and the end of times thinking.
Yes.
Okay, if I have your approval. when I was about 16 or 17, attending church, my father was a pastor, but at this point he had retired, and the Baptist church that I attended had a substitute preacher for a while until they found a new preacher. And so we attended a church one morning, and he was doing a sermon about, of course, Revelations. And this young soldier from the base had attended Tennessee Bible College, and he knew all about Revelations. And so he got to a passage that said, I can't remember the number of the passage in Revelations, but it talked about the spoils of war. And there was a big pregnant pause while he let that sink in, and he said, do you see the word spoils? And remember, this is about 77 or 78 year. Do you see that word spoils? What do you see in that word? Do you see the word oil?
Oil, spoiled, I see.
Yeah, the word spoils has oil in it. And then he went on a whole diatribe about how this gas crisis showed that it was the end of times. So,
wow.
So I thought you might appreciate that little story. That gives a little window into the kind of thinking we're talking about.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I have seen in various religious groups, notably not from what I know, in Islam or Judaism or Buddhism or Taoism or several other religions, but notably in Christianity, a tendency to dissect and create meaning out of the English language usage of words. And I always thought it was kind of weird, you know.
Yeah, he didn't, of course, bring up the fact that this was a King James English Bible that had no relationship linguistically to where the original passage came from, but it was just, I as a 16-year-old, I slunk down in the pew and looked around to see if anybody was, anybody's jaw was dropping, and I didn't see it, and I think that was one of the last times I attended church.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Another believer seized by the devil.
Yeah, also, about that time of my life, I started seeing how how many of the elders of the church behaved on the other 6 days of the week, and kind of turned me off.
I can see that. Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, I thought you might enjoy that. Thanks.
No, that's a good story.
Bye.
Who's next? Ross. Roth? Did I get that right? Hey. Ross.
Yeah.
Right.
You got it.
What's on your mind?
Well, you know, the magical thinking sphere is one that I was fortunate to escape from as well, having been baptized and confirmed in one of the mystical enclaves. But you're talking about dominionism, that wonderful myth where they will create that fertile ground upon which the Savior will return to. And I always sort of marvel at the magical thinking that goes on in times dominated by authoritarian figures like the one who is presently ruling over us. And the whole mythos of race also springs from this crazy authoritarian sphere where a small group of land-holding individuals wanted to justify the domination and enslavement of others by defining a subhuman class of people who they could seize their property because it's what God had planned. And it just, it is the magical thinking that seems to be the problem and gets people to worship this authoritarian ruler. And in one case, the savior, and in another, our president. So dominionism is, among the other things, racism, etc., this notion that there are magical properties imbued by either our interpretations of the book or the color of our skin, and that magic is the poison, the non-science that keeps us following these false prophets.
Well, yeah, I think
amazing.
I think it is amazing, and I think dominionism is a factor in all of this. But I think the most important understanding that I have, at least, of the phenomenon of racism. I don't want to exit this show with just a discussion of racism, because there's a lot more going on here. But it is important to understand that the justification for slavery and the slaughter of Native American peoples depended upon a notion of white skin privilege, absolutely and totally. In fact, it was so important that women and anyone of any wealth really avoided getting a suntan. I'm not making this up. You will look at the fashions of Southern women previous to the Civil War, and you'll notice a plethora of devices that protect the skin, particularly the facial skin, from being darkened by the sun. Because being white had a meaning beyond color tone.
Right.
I just want to throw that out there, because it's really amazing how insidious and powerful and not insidious, that is obvious, racism became in the history of the United States.
And I didn't mean to make race the focus, but it is, much like many religious beliefs, based in non-science. It is based in a myth, mm-hmm. which we create and seem to worship this notion. Just like we worship the wealth of Trump, which, when analyzed by economists and people with minds unlike mine who understand all of the math and the machinations and both, Trump really isn't an amazing wealth generator, but we've put him there as someone we worship, regardless mm-hmm. of fact, because we need to believe in something, and that myth drives us, gives us hope, and makes us passionate regardless of the facts. And race did that for the, you know, for the empire, the British Empire, and empires before it. They made people fervently, you know, pursue the Crusades. And, you know, to have someone tell me, oh, the Jewish race, blah, blah, blah. You know, those Jews, they're really good with money, and they're really good with this, and they're good with that, because of their race. And I think, what kind of magical thinking gets you to believe in these things? But it is that magical thinking that divorces us from reality and gets us to pursue these crazy, crazy activities.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. I think Abe does too. I think magical thinking is a phenomenon, a sickness really, a mental illness that has come to dominate American politics on the right. And what is called right-wing politics now is a mix of all sorts of contradictory ideas, and which is one of the reasons why I and Abe, I think, want to get back to the alternate right, alt-right phenomenon. But thanks for the call.
Yeah, excellent call. Thank you. 503-231-8187. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM. You can also write to us on Facebook, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Let's go back to the phones. Chris, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Really good discussion. And I think, you know, there's a lot that the last caller had to say that I think what I started to think about as you guys were talking about this idea of how the alt-right has, you know, moved into this space of having so much influence among a certain segment of the population in the United States. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of this lecture by Christian Parenti that was on alternative radio, Fascism, the False Revolution. And I've listened to it now a couple of times, and one of the phrases that he used was the rational use of irrational symbols. And I was like, what does he mean by that? And I think the alt-right has actually perfected that. The rational use, like you were reading those headlines, right, that are based on completely irrational notions and ideas that blow up as soon as you apply any kind of empirical investigative method to trying to uncover the truth behind any of those headlines. But they function in a really effective way for people who don't read beyond the headlines to reinforce the ideas that they already believe and hold true, regardless of the rationality or the veracity of the claims that are made. And he was talking about how, you know, both Mussolini and Hitler had these very effective uses where they would target different populations with these ideologies and then just hit them with mass propaganda of these completely irrational claims about Jews being dirty, or this is what a criminal Jew looks like, and just filling them with this ideology that's really predicated on fear.
How about this? How about Hitler publicly publishing the crimes committed by Jews, and compare that with Trump's suggestion that we publicly publish the crimes committed by illegal immigrants?
That's right. The two do parallel.
Continue.
And so, you know, and then when we think about, you know, I'm an educator, right? So when I hear about this magical thinking stuff, the main site to disrupt it for me is mass public education, that we give folks the tools to be able to think for themselves so that they can perforate the thin veneer of information and really find out what's really going on for themselves. And yet, you know, when you look at what's happening to the system of public education and how it's been systematically defunded and hollowed out over the last several decades, it's really no surprise that this generation of voting age Americans are so susceptible to so-called magical thinking or to falling into the ideology behind these irrational symbols, because we have not been given the tools as a mass public education system to effectively counteract those with rational thinking, with critical thinking skills. So I just go back to, you know, we have got to teach and we have got to educate our young folks to be able to think for themselves. And that's the fundamental way I think that we have to combat this stuff.
I would absolutely agree with that statement, but the data would suggest that young people, the under 30 crowd, are overwhelmingly progressive on a huge range of issues, and that the support that catapulted Donald Trump into the White House was mostly older. I'm not disputing the hollowing out of the public education system. Right, I'm saying that young people give us reason to hope, I think.
Yeah, and we also have to remember that, you know, there's not a whole lot of legitimacy to the election anyway.
No.
And so when we start saying, you know, we believe these things and we worship this guy, like, we have to be really careful about that, because really it's a very false premise to assume that he actually won by popular vote or any other means than by a rigged system. And then the last thing I wanted to drop in, though, was Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz has some great stuff in her book, Indigenous People's History of the United States, about the origins and development of racism from European ethnocentrism to Spain's 400-year project of purging Spain of both Jews who had converted to Christianity, conversos, and Muslims who had converted to Christianity, Morenos, and that was the seed in her research that grew into full-blown racism by the time we have the exploration and expansion into the colonies in the Western Hemisphere. Really interesting stuff in the first couple chapters of that book, and I highly recommend folks read into that. It's really good.
Hey, man, thanks as always for your call. Really appreciate your input. Trevino writes into the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Some rhetoric said by the white supremacists speaks to white genocide as a mixing of races. As a Native American, I say to myself in hearing this, some folks can be so lucky to experience that kind of genocide. Ain't that the truth? White genocide is, in fact, one of the tropes that is frequently invoked by the alt-right. This belief that there is a systematic attempt through the mingling of the races and other means to disenfranchise white people from their anointed role as the heads of and the gatekeepers of Western civilization.
Well, in fact, it's really important to understand the overarching ideologies that have dominated the United States and many other places. One of which is the creation of the concept of race itself. Race is a socially constructed reality. It really is. And if you look at the way thinking about race and definitions of race and so on through history, you immediately see how obvious that is.
Yes, you do.
So you know, it's all a bull. I can't put the last part of that word in there because we're not allowed to.
No, we're not.
But it is that. It is a socially constructed fantasy.
It is. I want to take just a minute to talk about this notion of economic nationalism. And then I want to talk about the Tea Party and how it is essentially the political manifestation on a larger scale of the alt-right and its ideology.
Yeah, and we should definitely talk about the Koch brothers in that context.
We should, yes. Okay, what is economic nationalism? Economic nationalism is one of the cornerstones of alt-right thought. And it is an expression of nationalism in terms of a rejection of globalization and multiculturalism. White nationalists and economic nationalists are avowed fans of capitalism and all the iniquities that capitalism spawns, but they reject global capitalism and what they see as its corrosive effect on the sovereignty of the United States. So what economic nationalists want to do is sort of withdraw from the global capitalist system and sort of turn inward and preserve a competitive free market United States that is no longer compromised by the need to participate in the global economic system.
So no more global trade?
Much more limited global trade and a much greater emphasis on production of goods and services here in the United States and the employment of white Americans to do so. Now, who does that sound like? Keep jobs here in the United States. Put Americans to work building American products.
It kind of reminds me of the guy who's the pretend president.
Exactly. Donald Trump articulated this pretty effectively.
Often.
And often on the campaign trail, despite the fact that he is an economic globalist himself, and he's got operations all over the world. And he employs in his hotels immigrants, both illegal and illegal, by the thousands. It's a pretty big irony.
Yeah, but they're under.
Indeed.
Under.
Now, what other political movement has expressed this notion of economic nationalism pretty loudly? The answer is the Tea Party movement.
Huh. Yes.
Among its more obvious and more odious racist tendencies, the Tea Party is a party of economic nationalism. So we begin to see now in the racist backlash, the nationalist backlash to President Barack Obama, you see the seeds of the political force that would eventually catapult Donald Trump into the White House. Now, when you put this into absolute terms, meaning how many people actually showed up to vote last November, and of those, how many cast their vote for Donald Trump, you're looking at 20-something percent.
Maybe 30%.
Maybe 30% of the overall American population.
That voted.
That voted, but have essentially put their stamp on this ideology, and this ideology now is guiding the ship of state. This is a perfect example of the maxim that says decisions are made by those who show up. I'm not sure who said that.
You did just now.
Just now.
Yeah.
But it's so true. And here we are with President Trump. And here we are with a white supremacist, white nationalist agenda guiding the American executive
branch. Here we are with a distinct possibility of Russian interference in our electoral process.
Interesting that you brought up Russia.
Oh.
Russia, in the annals of the alt-right, has a special role.
What's that?
As the traditional guardian on the Eastern Front, as it were, of both Western civilization and Christianity. Russia is the force that has kept the Asian hordes at bay and prevented them from flooding into Europe.
Well, they wear nice costumes. I mean,
they do the
Orthodox, and they have pretty paintings.
They do.
Got to look at the good stuff.
Yes. So, if you're wondering how incongruous is this cult of Russia worship that seems to have sprung up amongst American conservatives, it has some of its roots in alt-right thinking, which casts Russia as one of the gatekeepers of Western civilization.
Well, and that paradigm, the alt-right paradigm, if I understand what you're describing, there really is a pure strain of true thought, as it were.
Yes.
And everything else is some bastardization of that.
Indeed. Yeah, that sums it up perfectly.
Well, and then you have things which I think are in manipulating the racist biases that were, I believe, taught in school. When I went to school, the public school, that was embedded, not to be mean, but just embedded. I think of the Koch brothers and their decisions to oppose the liberal, as it were, establishment. I say as it were because I don't know how liberal it is, as it were. And they're pouring money into things that created know-nothing phenomena, like the crazy, weird conspiracists who became the dominant thematic leaders of the movement against healthcare, for example, mm-hmm. and so on. The what do you call them? The guys, everybody crazy people, kind of.
the Tea Party?
What?
The Tea Party?
Yes, I had a senior moment there. Woo. The Tea Party. Woo!
All right, let's go back to the phones. Joe, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to answer the question Joe asked. Where did Kellyanne Conway come from? Did she come from the same place? Yes, she did. She came from Robert Mercer. He resurrected the Trump campaign after it wasn't doing so well with the Republican National Convention.
Uh-huh.
And in bankrolling the campaign, he put Kellyanne Conway in place.
Who's Robert Mercer?
That's the guy who was funding Breitbart News.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, there's your question answered.
I'm a real prevert. I think she's just the cutest thing. No, I don't think that. I think she's weird. I think it's strange that she actually advocates an alternative reality. She said that. Mm-hmm. And she, you can't tell if she's serious because she's a paid operative. But I think that when you're being paid, your intellectual skills follow your money. Mm-hmm. And I think she believes that. And she's weird.
Yeah, she is weird.
And seeing stuff like her on the couch casually, using her trash phone, her portable phone, mm-hmm. while some very dignified African-American scholars who have been brought to the White House by the Trump organization, who couldn't have been very comfortable in the situation. They might have been if it hadn't been so weird, but having Kellyanne sitting on the couch right in the same room with them in a very casual manner has got to be perceived by guys who are very concerned with their own dignity as weird and perhaps insulting. Hmm. You know, I mean, just looking at pictures. So there's a whole lot of stuff going on, a whole lot of messaging going on within the context of this new government that's quite vicious, outrageous, and fundamentally about power to the white only ruling class. Hmm. That's what I think. So, it's a vast creation, essentially. You know, we talk about the myth of capitalism or the myth of communism. It's beyond that. It's a rationale for why I or someone else might not be doing so well without looking at the real causes of that. I mean, so far, nobody's talking about the onrush of new technologies, the fact of new open markets. This is a fact. You can't make it go away. The concerted, frightening aspects of the resurgent non-communist Russia. I mean, all that's real. And these people, the people who supported Trump, are willfully, and I have to say this from my conversation with people, willfully in denial about reality.
I would agree.
Oh, that's it then. I predict war with Iran within a year.
I don't know about within a year, but yeah, war with Iran is a distinct possibility. Our old friend Michael writes to the Facebook page to say, I read that article you mentioned, Bill Kristol is a Renegade Jew. That the SPLC mentioned that article proves that they are lying. The article was written by a Jew, and it made the point that Kristol was advocating policies that would harm Israel. Whatever you might want to think of that reasoning, it was not anti-Semitism. I think, Michael, it was anti-Semitism. We talked a little bit ago about how it's a seeming paradox that conservative thinkers can be simultaneously anti-Semitic and pro-Israel. And I believe this article encapsulates that notion rather nicely. Kristol was identified as a renegade Jew, which a term in itself is disparaging.
And silly,
because he advocated policies that were seen as a threat to Israel. And under this strange paradoxical dichotomy, here he was, a guy, a Jew, being attacked in an anti-Semitic way threatening Israel.
You know, and there's another thing going on here, which is extremely racist, which is the overarching notion of the Jews as a special or different people. The Christian fundamentalists have used this. Others have used it. During the Middle Ages, it was a common usage with giving Jewish people, by the fact of their Jewishness, an inherent magical set of abilities, mostly linked with Satan at that point. But, you know, this is all of it part of a set of traditions that put non-Christian, theoretically in the racist mind, non-Aryan peoples into a category that is attacking so-called Western civilization.
Yes, you're right. The terms Jew and Jewish over the centuries in Western civilization have meant both a faith and a race, mm-hmm. oddly enough. Even though they're practitioners of Judaism who are not of Semitic background.
No.
Yeah. Who are from, you know, every background under the sun, really. Jimmy writes in to say the alt-right, otherwise known as the KKK 2.0, is also...
I think that's good. KKK 2.0.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is also highly based on fear. One of their primary tenets is the fear of race mixing. The hatred thrown at certain people like Heidi Klum, Ellen Nordegren Woods, and even Ivanka Trump, until December, is one of their foundations. This is the same fear propagated via Birth of the Nation in 1915. This is not new. It's just dressed up to make it more palatable to certain white people who have believed such hateful things to be in the past. It's now just a bit more in vogue.
No, I think that's true.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely true. Those women that Jimmy referenced, Heidi Klum, Ellen Nordegren Woods, and Ivanka Trump, are celebrities who are in mixed race relationships.
Well, no, not mixed race. Maybe mixed race. See, race being a socially constructed concept.
Indeed, yes.
It's very flexible.
Yeah, they're all human beings, as far as I know. All right, let's go to the phone.
Wait, I'm not sure.
Well, you mentioned he might be an automaton of some kind.
Some kind of
Trump bot.
Maybe made out of clay.
Maybe. A golem?
A golem, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a Jewish concept. Okay, go
ahead.
Jane,
good morning.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wish that I could talk about several talking points, but I can only pick one, so I just wanted to say that, just continuously shocked at the stuff that comes out about Donald Trump and the alt-right. I'm mixed race myself, and just thought I'd mention the Cato Revolt to the educators out there. So the Cato Revolt is North Carolina, And I just, you guys can go look that up. My comment this morning is about Japan.
Well, wait, is Cato, C-A-T-O, the Roman?
No. The Cato Revolt is when a bunch of slaves revolted against slavery.
Oh, yes.
Slaves were put on lockdown because that's what my family would have gone through.
I see.
I'm part African American. I'm, you know, I'm mixed race from North Carolina, and so that's how I know that. And I mean, that's not, that wasn't my talking point, but I just.
No, I just was ignorant. I appreciate your information.
Yeah, and I mean, my family crossed the Mason-Dixon line at like 1790, went to the Ohio River Valley. And Unionville is another historical place that people, we don't teach history. We don't teach, I guess it's the Tea Party. They don't like multiculturalism. And I really wanted to mention and highlight today the need for cultural literacy. Literacy, cultural literacy, because not many people, for example, do know things about, like, say, Japan. Japan is so important to understand and highlight. They had Fukushima. The liquefied natural gas that's leaving Alaska, 100% is going to Japan, but not because the Japanese are like want to destroy the earth. They had Fukushima. Why are they taking the hardwood out of Africa? Because we had an environmental movement in the Pacific Northwest at the very same time that they had Kobe earthquake. And the buildings that survived were American buildings made of hardwood. That is why they're doing these things. Interestingly about Japan is that they struggle with nationalism as well. They were aligned with the Nazis in World War II. I recently heard one of the top experts on World War II say that the Mein Kampf was actually, censored. So they didn't quite understand what was going on. And the average Japanese person wouldn't have known. But they were aligned with the Nazis in World War II. And they do struggle with national identity and colonialism in the West. We don't have cultural literacy and world history in our schools, and it's very problematic. Currently, Shinzo Abe has denied, while we've taken in 48,995 immigrants, they've taken in 20 asylum seekers. They've taken in 27 up from 11 because, quote, it will be political suicide. We're taking care of ourselves. And they're a very different culture. And when we're not culturally literate and we're not historic, I think it's important to be to talk about world history instead of multiculturalism, because we don't have it. Most Americans, they don't understand the collapsing markets of communism. If they're not, like, I'm from an Eastern Bloc country, Czechoslovakia. When people talk about communism and they're like, yay, it's so great, I'm like, are you serious? You know what I mean? Like, we don't teach world history. Some of these things are not on people's radar screens. You know, I mean, granted, everyone's now working two jobs and changing baby diapers. Most people don't have time. But that said, it's like, we don't teach world history and cultural literacy, and I just thought that might be something to put out there instead of saying multiculturalism, because the alt-right really hones in on multiculturalism and getting rid of black history, for example. Black history, let me tell you, 200 slaves were freed in North Carolina before the Civil War, and when they left the plantation, They were not free, and they were not free for a reason. They were actually willed to a man, the overseer of the plantation, because if they were caught, they would be returned to North Carolina or anywhere. They could be enslaved again. So they were property. Black people were property. Yeah. And when you get rid of cultural literacy and, you know, I mean, I know most...
We need you to wrap it up, please.
Thank you. So I'll just wrap it up and just say that's my peeve with, I hope people will, I'm just really shocked at the alt-right. It's just unbelievable. And I think, again, we just don't have enough literacy. Period.
Okay, I don't mean to be rude, but we're out of time. I'm going to have to let you go.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call.
Yeah.
Cultural literacy is indeed...
Well, it's part of the things that can be done, practically speaking,
yeah.
to at least improve people's knowledge base. But remember that this terrible anger on the part of working class people is due, and this woman is in a way very right, is due to the lack of serious political and economic education in our culture, which has glorified capitalism and refused to talk about some of its dark aspects, and essentially created a notion which is deeply embedded with white racism.
Yep,
and I think that's really important to understand. It helps explain the Trump phenomenon.
It does. We are pretty much out of time here.
Out of time?
Out of time, yeah. This was
sounds
really
like a science fiction term.
This is a really good discussion today. I'm glad we took the time to dig into this. It's
well, I'm important. Glad you like it.
It's important.
Okay.
Yeah. We need to understand who these people are who are ruling us right now.
Well, and there's more to come. I mean, we only understand partially the degree of infusion of a Russian opportunist culture. We only really haven't even begun to analyze who the hell the money people are, where the hell the money people are, that decided to go with a actually psychotic person as president of the United States. I think we need to acknowledge that. By the way, I think we have to say out loud often that a crazy person is now the president of the United States.
That's your professional medical opinion?
That's beyond my professional. That's my simple observation.
Okay.
Doesn't take a degree in sociology or psychology to recognize cuckoo.
It does to make a diagnosis.
But oh, no, we don't agree about that.
Yeah, we do. Thanks, everybody, as always, for your calls. You are what makes this show go. And if you haven't become a member of KBOO, come to the website, click on the donate button.
And remember, the best music programming on the radio in the region.
We'll talk to you next week.
Exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
good morning, KBOO listeners. This is Tave Fache Drake. It is 9 o'clock, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. Up next is Alternative Radio. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg speaks about gender equity. I'm sorry, she speaks about gender equality, probably both. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, on stage and studio, the